Well, I thought since we already had a Dharma talk that we could spend a little while just opening it up for questions that you might have, questions that you might bring to Doksan, and you could ask them now instead. And the truth is that almost always your question is everybody's question. And it's always very helpful to hear others' struggles and insights and to share your own. So it doesn't mean we won't have Doksan, we will, but this would be an opportunity to open things up together for a little while. So it's up to you. And I just offer myself as a resource as I can. David?
I have a question of form.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to bring you in Doksan, but may be relevant here. My previous encounters in semi-formal settings, maybe formal settings like this, it seems like the casual banter that, say, Dennis and I have might be judged inappropriate. I'm wondering about your opinion.
When your casual banter in the Zendo?
For example, yesterday, I said, I've been looking for it for decades, and Dennis said, I think it's right there. And then I had something back to say, which was spontaneous, unrehearsed, of course. We don't help each other. And I was wondering if that is marvelously creative or a bit boorish or inappropriate.
All of the above.
Thank you. Angie.
Yes.
And thank you for describing me to a T.
Before the session started, I read a little bit of that free flyer about Coben and some of his words, and I believe the front page said a translation, something like not zero. And it made me think of the Heart Sutra, form and emptiness. You know, you mentioned yesterday or the day before about everything is coming apart and coming together. And I can understand kind of intuitively then, not, if it's not zero, than it is. You know, it's like two negatives make a positive. So it's that coming back again on the wheel in a way. Everything, we're stardust, we're carbon, we're going to go into the earth and dissolve, and then maybe the tree or the plant we eat then comes in. I mean, I just don't know if you could speak a little more about this.
I haven't read that, Carol. So I really don't know what it is.
Or how about relating to the Heart Sutra? I mean, this form, I still get hung up on that.
What? How can form be emptiness and emptiness be form?
Or ignorance and no end of ignorance. Is it just that everything, you used that, I don't know what you said, this was a
the
term.
Nose.
Sorry?
All the nose.
No, it was more like the, you know, where we just come together and then we and you used a little phrase. It was rather cute, actually. It's kind of like we playing together, and we or we fall apart, and then we come together.
Well, I was just thinking of how things, how life is. I always think when I hear that someone has died, I always think that at the same time, many little babies were being born at the same time. So it's that kind of continuity, that, and that's a very big example, but there are many, many examples like that. We tend to go to the negative. Our mind is mostly programmed to be negative. So I think one of the obvious reasons that we are attracted to this practice is because it's so important to overcome that and find a way to cultivate the positive, cultivate wisdom and compassion, although it takes a little extra effort in order to do that. So I can't really talk about zero and negative and not and
the Heart Sutra,
all of that, and I can't go into the Heart Sutra at this point. It's what it says. It's what it says. It is what it is. You can't separate anything from anything. And so there's nothing to depend on except the wisdom that runs through all things. That's the message.
I spoke with somebody from the Zen Center last week at our garden party at Clearwater, and he said, we were talking a little bit about Vipassana versus Zen, and I thought it was an interesting comment that he said, in a way, he felt that Zen was more intuitive somehow, maybe. And that made me think again, just from what you're saying, maybe it's this sense of wisdom that there is some kind of knowing that we feel.
You could say so, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Chris?
Could I ask a really practical question? If it's not...
That's what this is for.
How you care for these?
With respect?
Yes, but when you take them off, I've seen people take them off in different ways, and I mean, maybe that's something for a more private thing, but I thought maybe other people had that question.
Well, the way I was taught was that you... Oh, I'm hooked up here. You meet the two corners, and then you pull it away.
Sorry.
Oops. Over your head. And then you can just fold it up.
And you fold it with the printing on the outside?
Yes.
Oh, no. I've had this for how long? And then is there a way that you... Oh, gosh. Okay. So then what? So then you
slide it into the little...
Just like that, huh? Like this?
Mm-hmm.
I've been even pulling it again.
Well, you can do that,
yeah.
But you have an envelope,
right.
Presumably,
right.
And that's what the envelope has a slippery inside, so it just slips in.
And then, in the morning when you're doing dai zai gi da, do you have it in the envelope then, or do you take it out?
You take it out and you put it flat like this.
With all the writing on your greasy head.
That's why we shave our heads.
Thank you.
And then you can do this.
Before you put it on.
As a follow-up, may I just ask a
like, how do you clean these if they get food spots and things on them?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard to keep them clean.
Dry cleaning?
Well, the dry cleaners can't do it because the writing washes away. I have a friend who washed hers. She was so pleased that she had Coben's calligraphy on it. And then she washed it all by hand and she watched it all. So I always end up with a sort of disaster. There's that little chalk thing that you can get that takes greasy things off. And that's very helpful. And soap and water can do some of it if you're very careful.
Mr. Eraser, I think it's called, or something. That chalky thing.
That chalky thing, yeah. That works pretty well. Oh, thank you. And then you don't take it in the bathroom. You hang it outside. And there's always, in Zen places, there are always hooks outside the bathroom, so you can do that.
Okay.
Presumably, actually, at Pureg there isn't, so you have to find something. Some little nail sticking out. And you want to keep it on what they say is a high place, a place where nothing can bother it. So maybe the cat won't jump up and sit down on it or something.
Mm-hmm. And if you're doing something, I see some people turning it around to the back. Is that?
Yes. We used to do that when we were washing the dishes during sesshin. And sometimes people did that during serving, because when you're leaning over, then it gets in the way. Actually, I think it's more couth to wear it like this, just wear it in the front and make do with it. Donna?
Well, I think you're just terrible because you made me cry this morning. Just awful. Zenkei gave me a teaching years and years ago, and I didn't get it. And it's to do with these and the Kesa. And she told me the Kesa covers the whole world.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get that, and I didn't get that at all until this morning when you talked about the role. But
yes.
Suddenly. And then it occurred to me, didn't I just eat and drink myself? Thank you. I've been at a kind of block place for a while, and that just kind of opened up. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Makes me happy. Thank you.
You spoke of people dying and then people being born. And my closest companion is a big yellow dog.
I know.
And when we were driving up here, I learned that she has terminal cancer.
Oh, Laura.
So we're going to be doing a lot of traveling in September. And I don't believe in prolonging somebody's life for suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always curious about that question. Mm-hmm. You know, I think with people, they need to suffer till the end, till they get to God. But with animals, I feel like they're there all the time. So I just wanted to hear your thoughts.
This is a kind of question that really has no answer, or that it each time it's a specific situation. And personally, I think if there's tremendous amount of suffering, so that it's not a life anymore, it's just agony, that there's no point in humans or animals to continue, and that it's actually a kindness to help one out of that kind of misery that has no end, or has an end that is too far in the future. But, and I have done that with a family, beloved, and it's really hard to do. So it, oh, I'm so sorry. Whatever you do, it's going to be difficult. And it's really depends on the situation with the dog. So just ride along with the situation and let it tell you what needs to be done.
That's because we're traveling. That's the hard thing. Yeah. Otherwise it wouldn't be an issue, you know.
I'd yeah.
just be with her until we both knew it was the right time.
Right.
But to leave her for a long time.
Yeah. We'll wait to see how it develops. It may be quick. Mm-hmm. That would be a mercy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you don't have to decide now.
I think you can ask her as well.
That's true. Yeah. She'll know. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll all keep her in mind.
Her name is Soko.
Soko?
Soko.
Soko.
She goes back on the altar.
Yeah. Oh.
Sure.
I didn't know that was so that before.
Or this one. Angie, so this mind-body question and consciousness, you were saying today how things are untalkable. I mean, that's a concept or which we don't know, and yet here we have huge amounts of, well, I don't know, huge amounts, but grant money. We're trying to understand what's right in here and how it functions, or even what's under our feet in the deep sea, we still don't know. And like someone brought up today, the science, we are aware a little more that there are asteroids that could just come and wipe out the Earth, right? So how do you view all of this science with the Buddhist untalkable? Are they working together somehow, or is it just man, or is it just some kind of man's ego thinking that we can get to really understand consciousness, maybe, or cosmos way out there, Big Bang?
As Dogen said, we are always very curious about ourselves. We are born and we start looking around and saying, what the heck is this? And we're asking that for all the time from the very beginning as human beings, because we are able to ask. we're able to think in such a way that we can consider ourselves from the outside. And so it's part of our brilliance, part of our genius, that we're able to ask questions like that. But it doesn't approach it from the same angle as Buddha did, or as we do in Zazen. And I think until the scientists, and some of them are studying together with Buddhist practices, to come to some kind of deeper understanding of how this thing is. At Upaya, they have scientists who come and talk to each other about these questions. Dalai Lama is deeply interested in it. And many of us are reading about Zen and the brain and all of those. It isn't going to make us any happier or wiser, I think. I think our wisdom is something else.
You think, sorry?
Our wisdom is something else.
Again, coming back to that earlier question, is it something we just intuition, feel it, know it? Is that what...
I don't think we have to have a name for it.
Can I just recommend a book if you want names?
Huh?
You probably know it, The Buddha's Brain.
Yes.
Oh. And now it's on the web too, so you
is
can
it?
Update, because it came out in 2009, I think.
That sounds right.
It's the neuroscience of Zazen, I think. But that will give you more
practical. I was really struck this morning in your talk reading when you talked about the whole earth or the whole universe as our body, and it had the word which is not temporary. And sort of equally, I've been equally struck the day before, and this is not something, I mean, this is a dialogue or a dialectic that's going on internally with me probably for as long as I can remember, but certainly as long as I've been practicing Zen, it comes up in every sesshin. I was struck in your talk yesterday about this idea. For me, impermanence was really emphasized, and I was so... It seems really easy maybe for a lot of people, but it's really hard for me. And I was so relieved. It was like when you mentioned the whole earth as a body, which is not temporary, I just thought it was like this distress just lifted, and I was like so... But then I thought, well, it's Zen. There's got to be.
Oh, let's figure it out.
It's like I better not get my hopes up too much. I just thought I'd mention that.
Well, we're still going to die. Sorry. You're young. Who cares?
As you get older, it becomes ever more a friend to talk to as your death.
It does. It does. And more interesting.
Yes. Fascinating.
I mean, once you realize it's really, really true, you know, it takes a while to really get it. I mean, it's fine for everybody else, but not for me. I'm not going to go there. And then when you think, wow, that's really going to be something. Scary. But exciting, if you're curious. don't know what we're going to find. We offer ourselves to it, just as we offer ourselves to our life. Yeah. No, thank you.
Angie, when I got here, I was talking to one of the residents about someone that they're very, very close to, who, and I'm thinking a little bit about Soko now too, who is dying of terminal cancer and will probably be gone in a couple months.
Mm.
And so I have been thinking about that a little bit since getting here, because it was a couple, 3 days ago. And it occurred to me that it must be an incredibly powerful practice to come to terms with one's own terminal illness.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like the potential for release and
mm-hmm.
peace and awakening, profound awakening, is just boundless.
That's our practice.
I tried to put myself in that place, and it seemed like, you know, it could be a real blessing.
Yes.
To come yes. to that realization in the midst of your own, not ultimate, you know, unavoidable death, but I mean imminent
mm-hmm.
death.
Mm-hmm. That's our practice. Coming to terms with life and death. Body, mind, life, death. That's all the old master's advice, is to make death your subject and your friend. Yeah.
Can I share that Rumi poem, ancient Sufi master?
Let's finish with that.
The breezes at dawn have secrets to tell. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you truly want. Don't go back to sleep. People are walking back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds meet. The doorway is round and open. Don't go back to sleep.
Thank you all.